Today, we're joined by Rachel Barker, a truly integrative intuitive whose work blends tarot, intuition, and spirituality to help people reconnect with themselves and find compassion, alignment, and deeper understanding. Rachel's approach is rooted in both formal education and spiritual exploration. With degrees from Boston University and Boston College and current graduate studies in religious studies at Harvard, she brings a thoughtful, well-rounded perspective to her work. She also studies soul psychology with Thomas More and considers herself a learning Buddhist, continually expanding her knowledge and practice. She also shares weekly inspiration on loving kindness and intuitive tarot in her newsletter. Let's dive in and explore Rachel's journey, her unique approach to intuitive soul readings, and how she helps others cultivate self-compassion and trust their own inner wisdom.
Are you obsessed with the mystic? Are you looking for sisterhood? Are you ready to explore your inner magic? You've arrived, sister. Welcome home. I'm Maureen Spielman, and I started this show to highlight the intuitives, healers, and other courageous women I have met along my journey. Through amazing interviews, we go deep into the mystics and uncover the ways in which you can apply the knowledge and wisdom in your own life. We are all in this together. Sharing healing and joy in community is both my passion and my purpose. Here's today's conversation.
Welcome back to Mystical Sisterhood. This is your host, Maureen Spielman. I'm here today with Rachel Barker. You've trained extensively in intuitive and spiritual counseling, mediumship, the Akashic Record, Kabbalah, if I'm saying that correctly, Reiki, yoga, internal family systems, meditation, and breath work. Rachel uses a variety of these modalities in her sessions. So I love that so much, Rachel, as we begin, because I know each and every person is drawn to, it feels like exactly what they're meant to study and combine it in their own unique way to bring your body of work forward. So with that, I say welcome, and I'm excited to jump into the interview.
Thank you so much. I'm so, so happy to be here.
Yes. And I know you have connections to Amy Heierman, who is a great friend from my childhood days. She was really good friends with my oldest sister, I should say, just in her circle in high school, which is so funny because I saw her grow up. And Alicia Isaacshouse, of course. So I love to have these connections and just have someone come through known channels. It's such a beautiful thing.
Yeah, Alicia was one of the first to train me. I think a lot of the work that I do requires training, just like any muscle. And Alicia was instrumental in that.
Yeah. And so how did you first get into the work that you're now doing? I didn't even mention that, you know, you do these independently and you work at Miraval out on the East Coast as well.
Yeah, I was going through a kind of big transition in my life about 6 or 7 years ago. And I had an experience of an Akashic reading. I didn't even know what I was signing up for. It was an in-person reading and I went to it and cried the entire time. It felt so connected and I also had no idea what was going on. And at the end of it, I just said, how do I learn how to do this? And felt a little bit like I couldn't learn yet because I hadn't had enough of the experience of it being done to me, if that makes sense. But she said, oh, you're absolutely meant to be doing this. So get started. And it took me a little bit of time. And I actually started with Reiki and just kind of followed the steps. It's almost like I took a cobblestone pathway towards where I am. I just kind of teeter-tottered on different stones until I got here. And I'm still moving.
That's so cool. How about, were you in a completely different field before that?
I was. Yeah, I was an educator and a curriculum writer. And the thing about me is that I have a brain that likes to be doing a lot of things at once. So I never stop learning and I never stop teaching and have probably been doing so since I was 20. So I was in a different field. I moved out of it. It took me a little bit of time to kind of figure out where I wanted to land. And like I said, I don't even think I've landed. I think I'm still flying.
I believe that. I believe that. And you think, oh, this is where I am, but maybe 2 years from now, 5 years from now, it could look really different.
I mean, I'm very open to possibility, right? And I
Yes.
wasn't before. I think I felt for a while, I felt really stuck and didn't even have a sense of possibility in my life. I think I had kind of lost it along the way. So now I'm just very open, and it's been so interesting to see where all of this goes. And like I said, when you start with one thing, again, started with Reiki and didn't even understand what energy was when I was headed into that first Reiki class. Didn't think I would be a Reiki practitioner necessarily, but knew that it was moving me towards whatever it was that I was meant to kind of settle into.
I love that. Yeah. Did you ever have any inklings like earlier in your life that you were connected or just, why don't we say different than those around you?
Yeah, I was a really imaginative child. I still am. I actually talk a lot about imagination in the work that I do. I think imagination is one of the best things to cultivate if you are looking to cultivate your intuition. Because imagination is literally the idea that you can see things that aren't there. And then eventually, if you have the wherewithal to follow through, you bring it into being. Everything around us had to be imagined before it came to being. So
Yeah.
when I was little, I was highly imaginative. I had a really rich book life. I loved to read. I still do. And I think that helped train my imagination. And I also was so lucky to grow up around a lot of trees. Trees are just a big theme in my life. And so I think nature is also one of those things that kind of helps us to feel spiritually or just energetically connected to a wider world, not a world where it's just us and the kind of people in our lives, but this bigger, wider energetic world. So, yes, I was always into all of this, and I also was the kind of kid who knew who was calling before someone answered the phone. So,
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. And then do you feel like throughout your childhood or teenage years, you lost that little by little?
a little bit. I was trying to do the right thing and be a kid that maybe wasn't standing out so much. I did stand out in my whole childhood,
Yeah.
but trying maybe not to stand out so much. And I ended up using my intuition to serve what I thought other people needed from me. So I would intuit, I think, what I needed to do, but not necessarily what I needed to do, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so then I had to retrain myself. Anything, it's a training. So I, again, a few years ago, 6 or 7 years ago at this point, I retrained myself to intuit my own energy, not the energy of those around me.
Okay. Yeah. And for you, is that, how do you describe that as, did you become more acquainted with your connection with a source energy, with spirit guides? Like, how do you describe that for yourself?
I have a hard time describing it. I'm
Mm-hmm.
going to go with energy because I think that that is the best way to describe all of the little pockets of what everyone else labels it as. Spirit guides are a thing, source is a thing, spirit with a capital S is a thing, God can be a thing. And I just kind of see it as this big, bright ball of energy. And it's within all of us, any of those labels. And so I try not to get too particular about kind of who or what I'm connected with. I just think it's me at the highest level.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It's so beautiful because I think with a sort of an awakening that's going on, where, I've had many guests say that we all have intuitive abilities. And
Absolutely.
so, if we are trying to become more in touch with those, I'll say, is it getting quiet? Is it getting in nature? But I was thinking when you were just describing it too, for many, many people, I would venture to say most people, there's the believability factor. Like, is that true? Is this real? And, I know for myself, that's probably been there because as I've met people, even over the, I told you Alicia was an early friend of mine. And I think that I would always say, oh, it's for them, not for me, the kind of thing. And even as I started this podcast 2 years ago, but the how my belief system is changing, but is there that believability factor that's difficult sometimes in our human selves?
Definitely. I think we struggle with being both animal and human, and animals have intuition, and there's no doubt about that. And we are animals, and so we all have it. humans have what they might call logic or cynicism or maybe questioning. And that's great. I think curiosity and trying to understand is really interesting. There are some things I think you might not need to try to understand. And so intuition is absolutely something everyone has. I teach classes on intuition on a weekly basis, and I try to impart this to everyone that I speak with. It's a gut sense. It is, you can hone it, you can skillfully practice it. There, being still is a really great way to connect with it. I talk about stillness cumulatively. So every day, finding a pocket of stillness to just be. You're not trying to do anything. You're not doing intuition. You're just being. I tend to be still right when I wake up. I just set my little timer for 6 minutes and I just breathe for 6 minutes. So that then when I'm trying to tap into my intuition, I have a kind of practical knowledge base of what it feels like to be still. So when I really need it, I become still again, like I do every morning. So that's one way I think people can just start to ask themselves, okay, I'm going to settle in, become still, and ask my intuition what I need to know. And I have kind of other tricks and tips about intuition, but in terms of believability, I had that question too. I remember asking one of my teachers, is this my imagination or is this intuition? And the best advice I can give is like, who cares? Who cares? You are receiving information and you might just ask. You can always just ask yourself, is this intuition? Tell me more about what I'm sensing. I talk to myself all the time and it's very much like, what do I need to know? Tell me more about this. Is this
I love that.
what I think? Is this what I sense? And the more practice you get with that, the more that information comes through really clearly.
Yeah, the more it feels like the more you turn to self for the answers, because the day and age we find ourselves in, and I've talked to people about moving from this idea of the Piscean age to the Aquarian age, and kind of this the from the outer identification and where we kind of got our answers into this inner world and sourcing from within. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, I guess intuition for me is felt on the inside or it's sensed on the inside, but I also do take notice of what's on the outside. But I know what you mean. I'm not necessarily trying to get information from other people. I'm really trying to connect in with myself. But I think that we also have to, and it's fun to look for little clues and signals that we are on the right track or we are on the right path. And I do that too. I do that, and that's outside information. You know, sometimes if I'm feeling like I'm having a hard day, I just say, oh, I would love to see my favorite number or my favorite, a coin. Coins always mean a lot to me, or something that a symbol that means a lot to me. And then when I see it, because I always do, feel like, oh, okay, all right, my day is going to get better. I'm feeling a little bit more like I'm on the right track.
Yeah, I love that. I know recently I've gone through patterns and then not, and then again recently where I told you I'll wake often around that 4 a.m. hour, but I will look at the time and it will say 4:44. And I laugh because I also found out recently that was my birth time
Oh, that's
at
cool. I love that.
4:44 a.m. I had never knew, and I did a reading with someone where the birth time was needed, and I'm like, I'm gonna find this. And so that delighted me. But when I see the number, when I just look at the clock, it's like so fun. I liked how you said, Rachel, because no one's ever said it before, that we are animals, because that knowing or like taking that perspective or frame allows me to kind of put into perspective how I feel that I don't know if the word's evolving or something's growing within me, in that I feel when I think of my dog, that she's so highly sensitive and attuned to the environment around her. And I love how you're bringing that in because it's allowing me to connect that, like, oh, that's how we're becoming too. That's how, where you're feeling with your body. Is that right? You feel.
It's what we already are.
It's amazing. That's such a good frame for this conversation and people understanding who we are. Many of us have had so many over identifications with just our mind, just like even when we go through the learning process and we just use our mind, we memorize, we learn, we compile, all the different data and things. But there's, I love how that's opening up, like, oh my gosh, this intelligence is so much greater than we ever knew.
And I think that's why I play around in nature a lot, because it does give me that awe and that sense of understanding and that sense of being almost home in a way. I'm not necessarily like creeping around the forest and using my intuition to do things, but I'm just feeling a sense of being when I'm out in nature. And I do think that's one of the things for me that really helps me to tune in.
Yeah. And it ties in, I think, with your, again, I haven't really heard so many of my guests use imagination as a word. Creativity, yes, but imagination, and that's such a good conversation, because when I see you out in nature, then it's with awe and wonder, which see those two words seems like they tie in with our imagination.
Oh, I'm fully using my imagination when I'm outside. I'm wondering what nest is this? Who's living here? What's going on, over there? It's all really fun. But Thomas More, a soul psychologist, he has been the one to kind of teach me and help me understand how important imagination is. And when I was young, I was an imaginative kid, like I said, but I think sometimes it seemed like a hindrance. My imagination was overactive, or I was too sensitive to my imagination. And now I feel like I can really use it as a powerful tool towards intuition, towards creativity, towards curiosity.
Very cool. I love it. I'm thinking, well, first of all, I want to go look at his work. My teacher, Susie Lula, she had taught soul care for a while, and it was rooted in spiritual psychology. So I'd love to see like where they overlap, but also, the magic that he teaches as well. So I'm curious, shockingly, because by the time your episode airs, it will probably be like 126, 27 episodes. I haven't had an episode solely dedicated to tarot. And so I know that's one of your, maybe we'll come back and do a whole, because I have had very little tarot readings, but tell me about your love for that, why you are drawn to it, how you use it in your work.
Tarot is so fun, and it is, in my opinion, meant to be fun, meant to be affirming. And to me, tarot helps teach intuition. It's not the other way around. You don't have to have amazing intuition to read tarot. Tarot is almost like the tool that helps you gain that amazing intuition. I actually find this quite funny. I've only ever received one tarot reading in my entire life.
That is funny.
It was about maybe 10 years ago at this point. And I immediately, of course, said, "How can I learn how to do this?"
Yeah.
And when I picked up my first deck of tarot cards, yeah, there were parts of it I didn't understand or some confusion there, but in general, it felt like coming home. And I love it. I pull myself a card every morning over coffee.
Oh, very neat. Yeah, it's reminding me of me and the podcast. I created a podcast. I really wasn't a podcast listener.
It's
And
great.
isn't that funny? Because it's you're doing it for what you need it for. And
Yeah.
so, and then when you were just saying about the, yes, it can be overwhelming, but tying back to what you said earlier is just releasing the need to know. Who cares? Who cares if it's overwhelming? Open yourself up, if you're attracted to it, to learn and to play.
Yeah. And it is about play. And I have a system. I teach people how to read tarot cards in 45 minutes.
Oh, then I'm doing that
I have a whole system. I mean, you still need to practice, but.
Right. I was thinking this morning about anyone, I really feel this way, who comes into onto the Mystical Sisterhood podcast. It feels like family. It just feels like those who are meant to be here. And every guest I have, I dabble in so much work, and it's just so fun to hear what people do. And then that's why I love introducing it to my listeners too, because even the ones I hear from most often are like, oh my gosh, that was so delightful. So now, Rachel, so you've got your various areas of study, what you've loved, what you work in, and then you came up now to work with intuitive soul readings. And so I want to hear about that work and what that looks like, why you named it that, and what happens for a person when they come for an intuitive soul reading.
Yeah, so I trained in Akashic reading, which is simply put a kind of a reading that explores your soul through this lifetime and many other lifetimes, the infinite experience and infinite possibility. I'm sure your listeners already know about that though. And I also trained in mediumship, clairvoyance, and intuition. Two very different kind of training modalities. The Akashic stuff has a lot of built-in ritual, has some rules tied to it, has a kind of like playbook. Here's how to do this and here's how to do that. And then the intuition training that I received was very much like, you should be able to give someone a right dead on intuitive reading in 2 seconds without doing anything. You should
Okay.
be able to just breathe and tap in. So I've blended those two. And I find labels to be horribly restricting. I have a really hard time with labels. So even the word Akashic, although it's a beautiful experience, it just didn't quite fit what I was doing at the time or what I am doing at the time. And so I started to call the readings that I do intuitive soul, because some people want to explore another lifetime or what their soul's purpose is, and that's wonderful. And some people come to me to talk about the day-to-day, and we're not even getting to, the more kind of esoteric out there stuff about the nine other lives that they've had. And so I think the word intuitive soul encompasses what I'm trying to bring. And I do bring everything that you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. It's all in there when I'm working with someone. And look back at my website, and 2 years from now, I might change the name again. I'm just always moving through. If I'm changing and evolving, the work I do changes and evolving, and it never quite stays the same from year to year or even month to month.
Yeah, I love that. I always think that readings can be so beautiful and that they bring such different perspectives to people. I was going to say that at Miraval, I've only been there once and I went to out in Arizona, but I was going to say, oh, that the people are coming are open to this sort of thing. And yes, that may be true, but that doesn't mean they have any experience in it, right?
Most people don't.
So, right, there all the offerings are there of the metaphysical and energy work and just these beautiful what are considered to be alternative kind of modalities. But I found in my life, I always say with friends like Alicia or friend Valerie or who I've done repeat readings with, that it feels like it's really information that I go use in my life. It's not this one-off information that is random and not meaningful. I use it as much as a therapy session or, and not to compare the two or say, however, in my life, I've gotten so much benefit. And I sometimes laugh because I will get off a call and I'm like, why did that feel like a coaching call or a life coaching call almost in a beautiful way?
Yeah, I tell people that I kind of think of the humanness of us, the self, as having four quadrants: the spirit, the mind, the body, and the heart. And it's a great thing to have someone to help you with all four things. And it doesn't have to be the same person. And so for the spirit, I actually am getting readings from people at least once a week, if not more. So it's never old to me, because our soul experiences the universe in an infinite way. The information that comes through is infinite. It never ends. And I think people who come to me for a one-off, it's amazing and it can be completely transformative. And then people who come to me regularly, once a week, once a month, they're also transforming, and it's a different way of kind of evolving, because you are still receiving this pretty in intense and amazing information, but you're integrating it differently because you might be using it on a weekly basis, versus taking it in one time and that's it.
So good. Such a gift. So having an individual, because I had written that question when I shared the questions with you of, what do you hope that an individual leaves with? And maybe you don't even go there. It's just like whatever comes through is what they're meant to leave with. But I love how you're saying they will leave with knowing that they are a soul and a spirit, that there's this adjunct dimension that maybe they don't think about so often.
I do hope they leave with something specific. If they don't, I actually feel I haven't done my job. I believe that everyone deserves to have faith in themselves, and that is probably the thing that I the kind of overarching thing that I want you to understand after you've left a session with me, or in the middle of the session, hopefully even right at the beginning.
Yeah, right.
Because I think that we often second guess ourselves. I don't know about you, but I can be quite harsh to myself. My self-talk is not always the kindest. And I need a lot of help just making sure that I stay connected to myself and that I have faith in myself. And so that's what I hope to impart on others. And I think a wider perspective. I am so relieved now that I have a wide view of my life and the world around me. When I had a more narrow perspective, I felt nervous about everything. And I still feel nervous about things. I'm a worrier. It happens, but I have a much wider understanding of some of the things that really made me nervous. I'm cool with now.
Yeah, and you can probably see yourself on that progression sort of timeline in a way, like, oh, the me of even 5 years ago. I find myself the same. It's like I'm pretty tempered most of the time, and then I have three children, so worries come up around that, and I'm able to respond to them more in the moments that surround it. I don't fall into the rabbit hole I used to, but thanks for being, just sharing about the part of you that, can be hard on yourself, because I think that, isn't it funny how that was called sort of, oh, the human condition? Like there are certain things that are called the human condition. And it's like, well, no, the humans were conditioned to feel that way and think that way. It's not actually our inherent nature, I don't think.
It's all a practice. I actually think of everything I do as just a practice, which is
Yeah.
funny. What am I practicing for? I don't know, but it's all a practice.
Yeah. And it sounds like great fun too. This is the area of the work that's light. And I find most whom I interview are just such light beings. There's a light that comes from within you. It's so apropos to the work you do and bringing out others' light. So have you, in your individual work, or who's coming to you, Rachel, do you feel like there's any changes going on? Do you feel like there's openings happening, or even what you're reading or you're taking in or how you see? And I know that, and you told me that you're completely not a social media person, that, we can talk about that, because I think any of us who hear that, and I have one foot in, one foot out, and I wonder my place in it. And I think that it's a great conversation to have, because so many of us have entered, I guess I can speak for myself, a bit more blindly in a way, where it's like, oh, this is here now. Everyone's doing it. Make an account, like these kind of things. And all of a sudden, you're going down those paces and you're absolutely having these feelings come up, like, doesn't feel good, all the things, or it feels too much, or why do I have to do it someone else's way, and all the things. But can you share with us your process and how you came to this for yourself?
I haven't had a social media account in many, many years. I actually don't remember when I quit, but I did quit. And I have a Substack. That's my only kind of media, and I don't even really participate on it. I just send out a newsletter every week when I get to it. But I'm first of all, I'm very sensitive. I think that might be clear given the work that I do. And for someone with sensitivities, having unlimited information at my fingertips is far too much for me. And it's ironic because the work that I do gives me unlimited access to the soul, but I'm doing it on purpose. I'm pausing. I'm saying, okay, now's the time I'm moving into this space. So social media is kind of for me like it's a black hole, as I know so many people have described it, where there's not a lot of purpose to it. I'm also pretty easily influenced, and I don't need to be buying every ad, everything that I see an ad for on Instagram, because I would if I could. Or I would compare myself to someone else's life, or compare myself, am I doing better, or are they doing better? And comparison is the thief of joy. So I'm really, it's not even that I'm mindful about it. I don't even think about it. I'm just not on. I prefer to take in information in a way that is contextualized. I think social media decontextualizes everything. So instead of reading a meme, I'm reading a book. It just helps me to stay a little bit more centered. And I think it actually is a positive outcome then on the people that I'm close with and then the people that I work with.
I love it. Thank you for sharing. I think that that's going to be a whole soundbite right there that I want to share. When we met a couple of weeks ago, you talked also, I think, when you were sharing it with me, that your an empath, and this is an important to you that you know you are an empath, but it's not empathy you use during a reading. Can you talk more about the empath? If you would just talk about the empath in general, I think that I'm an empath, but I never really realized it. And still now I'm coming into maybe knowing that a little bit more. And like yourself, I am not a fan of labels. So that could be one reason I never identified with it. But if you'll talk a little bit about empath and empathy.
Yeah, I would say I have a lot of empathy. I actually don't call myself an empath, or I try not to, right? Because when we identify with that label, then it really sticks to us. So I would say I have a lot of empathy. I'm not an expert on empathy. I will say that. I'm sure there are people who are. So this is only my experience with empathy, but my experience with empathy is that I can very easily pick up on what other people are going through, and then I feel it very deeply in my body. And then I feel uncomfortable, or I feel like I have to do something about it. If someone's having a hard time, I feel suddenly like I have a responsibility to take care of them in some way. And sometimes I do that, right? But sometimes the empathy is, it's almost overwhelming. So when I'm in a reading with someone, I divorce myself from empathy. I always stick with compassion. Compassion is always there. And compassion to me is a little bit more removed. I'm not experiencing the person's emotions. I'm witnessing it and I'm here for them, but I'm not necessarily feeling it all throughout. Empathy also is a feeling, in my opinion. And I think feelings are really hard to have when you're using intuition. So when I'm using intuition, I try not to have feelings about what I'm doing. I call intuition a sense versus a feeling. So in intuition, I'm sensing what's happening and I'm reporting what I need to report, but I'm not necessarily feeling for the person. And this allows me to, I think, give pretty clear readings, because I'm not having my own emotional response to what they're experiencing.
And did you, when you first started giving readings, was it a little bit different for you that you, or you just knew you
Great
started there?
question. No, it wasn't different. It was a relief. It felt like I had found a place where I could use what I was good at, but not necessarily do it in a way that was wringing me dry.
Do you ever have people in your, when they find out what you do in your life, start asking you questions and then you have to say like, okay, why don't we make a formal session?
Oh no. Actually, everyone's really very, very great about the boundaries. I think I might just have very good boundaries, and so no one tries to even push them.
Yes. I love that. Thank you for, well, you don't have to be an expert in empathy to have just such a clear description about what it means in your own life. And I think so many people listening too fall into the category of, well, they're interested in the messages here. So I feel like there's something in it for them. And even how we live our lives, and I love how you're using compassion as a quality that can be there and be, it's sort of like compassion feels neutral in a way. It's
I think
not,
empathy can sometimes cause a sense of codependency, and compassion is a really clear way of being able to express sensitivities about someone and care for that person, but not necessarily codependently try to, serve them or force them or help them in some way.
Do you feel that in life, our language and the words we choose are important?
Yes, I really do, but I also feel like our language just doesn't have what it takes to describe a lot of the terms that I'm using. I joke in my intuition classes, I say, we're here for 45 minutes, and for 45 minutes, I'm going to really do my best with the English language to tell you what intuition is, but the reality is, I won't even be able to. I think that it is a sense that we have to just understand. So I do my best with language. I think it's really important to be careful about words. And I change my language when I need to. Like I said, if right now I'm doing intuitive soul readings, in a year or two from now, it's very possible I'll relabel the work that I do, depending on how it evolved.
Well, and I'm thinking too that there's so much energy in words. And when you were talking about empathy, I was thinking about how when something challenging happens in someone's life, we want to say, I'm so sorry. And And I've heard different takes on that. Like you're actually that feels like what you said with empathy, where it almost feels like you're putting a quality on it. I don't know if I'm explaining myself correctly. You sh nodding your head like you know what I'm talking about. But I do try to, when I go to write something, or I try to say something like, I have so much compassion, or I think it can be sort of, I tend to say like, I'm sending you love. And while that's true, there's a triteness to it too, that there can be.
Words are so, I just think words fail us a lot.
Yeah,
And
thank you.
you're welcome. And I also struggle with the words I'm sorry, because it really puts an ownership on the person receiving them to say it's okay, even if it isn't, or to say thank you, even if they don't actually need your sorries. So I use the words I'm sorry very sparingly, actually.
How about I'm here for you? Or, one time, or sometimes when I'm thinking of a conversation with my oldest sister, it's so often we don't ask, what do you need? How can I be here for you?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I often say, tell me what you need. And sometimes what they need is a nap. And so, you know what I do then? I buy them a blanket and I send it to them as a gift. So I will, when someone's going through a hard time, I often say, why don't you just tell me what you need? Not from me, in general. What do you wish you had? What do you need right now? And then I do my best to send it to them. Sometimes I can't. Sometimes they need something that I just cannot do. But I try to figure it out.
I love that though, because it ties back into your imagination, because your question, like, what do you wish you had? That's a very imaginative question. And again, it's just filled with light. Rachel, as we kind of, circle towards the end of our time together today, what have I left out, or what's important to you? Or do you have any, lots of times towards the end, I like to ask the guest, is there anything coming to you feel is important for the listener?
I think people should be open to realizing how much power they have. And when I talk about power, again, here we go with words, I don't mean kind of authority. I mean electricity. I want for your listeners to just remember how empowered and how much power they have. And the same goes with faith. To have faith in yourself. I think sending yourself loving kindness is one of the greatest ways to affirm faith in yourself. Loving kindness meditations, also called metta. And I often will just say to myself, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I exist with ease. Or I'll say it about someone I'm about to meet or connect with. I said it to you before we got on this call, even though you didn't know it. It's a loving kindness out to the universe, but then back to yourself. So those are three things, really: power, faith, and loving kindness.
So good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I love to ask that question, because there's no, in no way it's scripted, and it's really what's important to you and what's meant to come forth. So yes, I'm so excited about that. What I've been noticing lately too with that question is I feel like it's been there for at least 20 interviews, and I just want to take that gold mine that the guest yourself share and just somehow put them together, even if it's in written word. But it just delights me. So thank you, Rachel, for being here. Would you like to share where the listeners can find you? Do you have a website?
I do. I know I'm not on social media, but I actually have a website. It's alignedandawake.com. And I also have a Substack, which is called Monday Metta, which is all about loving kindness sent out every Monday morning.
Beautiful. Okay. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This was just lovely to chat.
Yes. And for anyone, hopefully many who have stayed on this long, I'm recording this at 7 a.m. and Rachel's recording it at 8 a.m. So,
But I've had my coffee, so I was able to speak coherently.
hey, we were ready. When you said, hey, by any chance, can you do this? I kind of feel like, why not? I mean, this is the podcast. I mean, it works for me. I'm an early bird.
Thank you.
So, okay. Thanks for being here. Thanks for the listeners for being here as always. And we'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Mystical Sisterhood. If you love what you heard, please hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. And if it's on Apple or Spotify, I would be so grateful for a 5-star rating and review. And be sure to share with a friend if you're called to do so. To learn more about my one-on-one coaching programs and join the Mystical Sisterhood community, visit MaureenSpielman.com or MysticalSisterhood.com.